Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now, you might have heard about this in the news lately, the dangerous street trend called the knockout game being played by some teenagers. And the rules challenge teens to approach a stranger in public and hit them once hard to deliver a knockout blow, They're not stealing, and most of the time the victims are chosen at random to simply be knocked out with a punch, or at least knocked to the ground. It's a game with the sole purpose of committing a violent act against a stranger, and recent news reports say incidents connected to the game have cropped up in at least six states. We have here Jeffrey Butts from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice to talk about this and the suspicion that it's turning into some anti-Semitic attacks in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. But Professor Butts, thanks for being here. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
And listeners, call in and let us know if you know anything about the knockout game. Have you or anyone you know been knocked out? Have you witnessed a knockout? Have you participated in a knockout? 212-433-9692. Or have your teenage kids talk to you about the knockout game or you to them? 212-433-9692. And, Professor, I think we should start with this acknowledgement that the knockout game is perhaps not a particularly new phenomenon. So give us some clarity. What's the deal with this, and why is the media paying so much attention to it now?
Well, your last question, I think the clear answer is there are videos of people being knocked out on the street and falling. And I think whenever you have images like that, people are just drawn to them. The historical question of why now, probably YouTube has a lot to do with it. It's also just the phenomenon of sort of crowd. So when videos start appearing, people start linking, people start hearing about it, then you have copycats, and it's just sort of a fad.
And in Brooklyn, there have been a few incidents that seem to be targeting the Crown Heights Jewish community. Are you seeing that trend? Is there a type of people being targeted? Is this happening in that way in Brooklyn, as far as you know?
Well, in Brooklyn, in certain areas of Crown Heights, if you're walking down a street, a large proportion of the people you walk by are going to be visible Orthodox. So the fact that some of them have been hit, I think it's just a function of numbers. I think it's way too early to be attributing this to any kind of hate crime. I think when you we look at the videos, you look at who the victims have been and who the perpetrators have been. By and large, the people doing this are young men, of course, as always. And the victims are widely ranging. They tend to be not teenagers. They tend to be a little older. But they can be male. They can be female. They could be any number of ethnicities and racial backgrounds and religion. So I think it's mainly kids, young people see someone coming at them who's not like them, who they believe is, the category of other, not like us, not like people we know, and so they're considered possible victims. And if they're a little older, that makes them easier. And if they're carrying something in their hand, that makes them easier. And if, like me, you're walking around a city with your earbuds in all the time, that also probably makes it a little easier because you're more oblivious to your surroundings.
How about the profile of which teens are doing this?
Well, that's a common question about all misbehavior. It's a wide spectrum, and I always tell people that you have to remember that adolescence, the normative behavior for adolescence, is to be oriented to thrill seeking. Fun is the most important thing in their life. After that comes their peers and peer approval, excitement. And one thing that's way down on the list is any sense of responsibility, commitment, forethought, wise thinking. So that's the nature of adolescence. And depending on what environment you're in, that could mean if violence is a normal thing around you and in your life, this doesn't seem like a big deal to you, and it could seem like a hoot for you and your friends to go out and try to knock out someone, and you're not thinking about the pain and suffering and the fear that you're inflicting on someone else because they're just a thing. They're someone who you don't think of as part of your social world.
But not all teens, even not all teens in violent communities, the vast majority of teens in communities with a lot of violent crime, let's say, relative to other communities, do not just walk around randomly punching people. So who winds up participating in the knockout game? Is it coming from gangs? Is it coming from any organization? Is there a meme online? Where are those who are doing it getting it from?
Well, the meme online, I believe, is a big part of it because as the story spreads, and people are getting attention for this, of course. So if you can end up on your local news broadcast commenting on this, like I am right now, or someone who's seen an attack or condemning it, and that's what spreads. The media attention is partly responsible for spreading this. I think doing this on the radio is perhaps more productive. I said to a television broadcast reporter just the other day that I think one thing the media could do would be to stop showing the knockouts themselves on television, that a good story, a socially progressive story on this would be to show the moments leading up to the knockout, to show the perpetrators if they're visible on one of those security camera feeds, if someone might be able to recognize them and call in their identity, and then to show the victim, hopefully interview the victim, show their injuries, spend some time on what happened to them as a result of this attack, but not show the actual punch. And unfortunately, what most television stations do is run repeated clips of the moment of the punch and the fall. And I think if you're an insensitive, uncaring teenager, that just draws you to the behavior because it seems like an exciting thing to do.
Jeffrey Butts from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice with us talking about the knockout game. Our lines are full with people who want to say things about it or share experiences. And let's start with Cindy calling from Columbus, Ohio. Cindy, the hometown of my grad school alma mater. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yes, thank you. My daughter was, when she was 21 years old and in college, she was walking down the street with a friend. And she is a white woman, and her friend was also a white woman, and a group of African-American women were on the other side of the street, and they walked down, and one of them crossed the street and just decked my daughter. They just ran away.
How is she?
She was fine. I mean, she was, you know, her face was bruised. She was not completely knocked out, but I'm assuming that was the intent.
Is it happening much in Columbus?
It happens sporadically from what I'm told.
Has it been a big thing in the news there?
No, not at all. I've never seen it in the news. My husband is a criminal defense lawyer, so he has heard about it. But we did file a police report, and unfortunately I don't think the police took it very seriously because it was in the campus area.
Did you say when this was that it happened to your daughter?
This was about 18 months ago.
Uh-huh. So it's not a brand new phenomenon, even though the media is talking about it a lot in the last few days.
Correct.
Cindy, thank you very much for your call. And she mentioned the race of the perpetrators, and I'm presuming her daughter is white. And a number of other people are calling in to bring up this exact point, that this is a black thing and most commonly a black on white thing. Is that your understanding?
In any kind of criminal behavior, people tend to focus on the race and ethnicity of both the victim and the perpetrator. I think it's just often inappropriate to draw inferences from a few cases or even from a dominant pattern because that encourages you to think about this as a racial behavior. I think it's more about the age of the perpetrators. It's probably more about social class. If you're growing up in a neighborhood where violence is an everyday occurrence, you hear gunshots at night, punching someone seems like a very minor infraction. So I understand in America, class and income is often correlated with race, but I don't think it's appropriate to say that this is a black thing.
Danny in the Rockaways, you're on WNYC. Hi, Danny. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, good morning. I just want to bring out a point. I'm the police council president for the Rockaway area, some of the Rockaway area. And that question was brought up last night, and I think the community affairs answered it pretty decently. I know it's hard, but he actually said to the person, not that it's going on here in Rockaway, I haven't heard of it, but he said you're going to have to be a little bit more aware now of your surroundings when you're pulling out your keys to your car, when you're walking out of the store. In other words, keep you out of it and just keep your surroundings. Look around you, because it is going on, and I thought that was a pretty good point.
Is it happening in the Rockaways, as far as you know? Has it actually happened?
Not at all. I haven't heard of it. But I also have to agree with the caller that just a couple of callers before. I really don't think it should be shown on TV, the media, this, because it can escalate it. We all know other groups or gangs of people that's seeing this. Oh, look at that, you know. You don't need to see that on TV. Reporting it in the paper is enough, I guess, but you don't need to see visual.
Danny, thank you very much. And you were agreeing with our guest who said that, Jeffrey Butts from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. And it's interesting because they're talking about it in the Rockaways at the police council meeting because it's been in the media. In Columbus, where it actually happened to that woman's daughter, it hasn't been in the media. I don't know how to unpack all that. But do you think that in addition to maybe showing the moment of impact, which is counterproductive, that the media is just making too big a thing about this, talking about it to a greater degree than it's actually happening, and it's a really rare event?
Well, it is a rare event. All violent crime is fairly rare, and it's much more rare, it's much more infrequent than it used to be. So overall violent crime is about, especially committed by youth, is less than half of what it was just 20 years ago. So all violent crime is down. The John Jay family just lost one of our most well-known scholars, Jock Young, who passed away recently, and he actually coined the term moral panic as an element of crime policymaking, which is when an image takes off, a story takes off, and fear grips us, we can have legislation passed, a lot of social concerns raised about something that has a very small probability of happening, whereas the day-to-day crimes that do happen to more people, home invasion, burglaries, street-level robberies, simple assaults, those are the things that we're more likely to encounter as potential victims. But we all worry about the things we see on television that are more visually gripping, that have the story is more horrifying, even though the probability of it happening. It's like we all get in cars and drive around without thinking about it, but when we get on an airplane and buckle up, that thought occurs to us, what if?
And airplanes basically never crash, and cars do quite frequently. But it reminds me a little bit in this respect of the old Central Park jogger case in New York, where, you know, in addition to the fact that those who went to jail for the crime were later exonerated because somebody else admitted to having actually done it, but the term wilding for the notion of these teenage wolf packs roving the streets and roving the parks and wilding, attacking other people, got lodged into the public mind, and it wasn't happening as much as, you know, as the media was covering it, and it was on the front pages of the tabloids and all that. Do you think this is a little like that?
Well, the reaction to it is like that. It's you could use the word hysteria, an overreaction, but it's a, you know, you see those videos. I'm like everyone else. You see that a couple of them which have been shown over and over, and the person just drops, just dead weight. And it's both horrifying and you can't look away because it's a human tragedy, but it's an unusual thing. And so we watch it. And I think when people see that, it spreads, the behavior spreads. I think it's similar to, I don't know why they did, you know, kids do a lot of crazy things, but a couple years ago there was this wave of YouTube videos of people taking a cinnamon challenge, where they take a spoonful of dry cinnamon and then, of course, cough and can barely breathe. And, you know, who would do that when you see someone's reaction to it? Well, teenagers will do that because they think it's funny and they like to see they like to trick their friends into trying it. And if you watch the videos of these attacks, you see them, even if it's a security camera with no sound, you can tell by their body language and how they move that there's a spring in their step. They start to run away. Then you can tell they're laughing. It's about peer approval for ridiculous behavior, which is part of adolescence.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. Soon we're going to have a legal ID speed reading contest. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio as we talk about the so-called knockout game with our guests from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, Jeffrey Butts, and Peter in Newark. You're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Brian. It happened to me, and I was the one that getting charged for it. I was coming out of Penn Station, walking up Raymond Boulevard. I saw it coming. I saw the punch coming, so I was actually just, you know, as you're walking up, because it's not the greatest location. And one of the young guys swung at me. I ducked it. We got into a scrum. I wound up fighting a couple of them. Cops came. I got charged, even though eventually it was dismissed in court. But that was, you know, I was lucky that they had, you know, they have cameras there now, so they were able to go back and see the camera. But this is what they're doing. But I wound up getting charged for it. Originally, you know, ultimately got dismissed, but it was, you know.
Oh, what a story. And, well, there's the, an instance of the upside of surveillance cameras, it sounds like. He was able to show, if his story is accurate, that he was acting in self-defense. But what do you recommend, Professor Butts, for people who do see it coming? And should they do what Peter did?
Well, I don't know. The decision to fight or flee is, of course, always a very important decision. I think people should be careful about that. Try to avoid being hit, obviously. But I think we have to – the security camera, especially in an urban area like New York, security cameras are just pervasive. And I think – The most helpful thing to do would be if people, when they see these videos, if you see someone in the video who you believe is someone you know, call it in. And we have this anti-snitching culture, but I think if people take the responsibility to contact law enforcement and say, I think that's my neighbor, or I think that's the young man my son hangs out with, do that. Because if the community expresses clear condemnation of this behavior, young people will eventually get the message that it's not cute. So I think the video cameras, although they're part of the problem in this fad, they could also help us find a way out of it.
KB in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, KB.
Hello, Brian. How are you today?
How you doing today?
I'm doing good, doing good. I've been watching the media and things like that, but this whole knockout game is absolutely nothing new. I'm 36, and the first time I saw it, I was 16 years old in high school, and it's been happening for a very long time. I mean, I guess it's kind of good that it's getting attention now so that, you know, some avenues of, recourse can be taken, but it's been going on for a very long time.
In just this kind of way where it's usually a random act to slug somebody with one punch and see if you can knock them out?
Yes, actually, it's totally random. That's the point of it, is to be random. From what I have witnessed and understood from the people who I know, because some of them are not law-abiding citizens, some of them do belong to gangs, and actually it's not all gang-related at all. Sometimes it's just a group of kids with nothing to do, and they'll say, hey, let's just go knock somebody out, see what we can do. Hmm. And usually it's the new person in the group that's charged with actually doing it.
In your experience, since you say you've seen it a lot and for a long time, is it often black on white?
In my particular area, no. It's basically has to do with association. If someone knows you or recognizes you, then you're pretty much okay. But if they don't know who you are, they've never seen you before, regardless of your race or whatever, if they don't know you, they feel as though retribution is minimum to none. So they then feel as though they can go ahead and do it on their own and not have to worry about things. And from my understanding from everything, 9 times out of 10, nobody gets caught. Nobody gets arrested. They pretty much go free.
KB, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Yehuda in Crown Heights begs to differ, I think, on whether these are hate crimes in some instances recently. Yehuda, thank you for calling. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning. I listened to your guest who seems to be dancing around. He didn't mention at any point that all the perpetrators have been black and all the victims happen to have been Jewish. And the interesting thing about it, I think, I don't know that they're hate crimes. They're probably just going for easy victims because, I mean, Orthodox Jews were not exactly known for hitting back. But what's interesting to me is that you'll hear another caller just saying is that it's not uncommon. And his reasoning that now suddenly it's a it's a big deal is because of social media, or not because of social media, sorry, because of the video. I don't buy it. I think the fact that it is, there's a pattern of race here, whether or not it's a hate, whether or not it's because of hate, is what made this a story. And that's a good thing, because otherwise it just gets written off as kids being kids and nothing's done about it and the police ignore it. The fact that, you know, it's being looked at as a hate crime is we're talking about it, and that's a big deal. I think he's just totally ignoring that fact.
Professor Butts?
Well, that's a point you can raise, but I think in order to make that argument, you have to look across all the cases. And if you only look in Crown Heights, as I said before, you have a much higher probability of a victim being Orthodox. But when this is happening in Columbus, Ohio, and places all around the country, the pattern is going to vary. Excuse me.
Absolutely, but is it making the news the way it is here? That's my point. I don't think that it's necessarily a hate crime. I think it is circumstance, but, I mean, it's a good thing that we're looking at it, because at least we're talking about it. I don't know. I do think, yeah, they're going there. I think they're a bunch of punks that are going as cowards in a group to attack people they don't think are going to fight back. I mean, I've been speaking to some people here who say they better hit me, and they better win, because otherwise someone's going down. But I don't think so. A bunch of teenagers are going to beat one strong guy, and so they're clearly cowards. But I think that specifically they're going after the easiest target. If it's just by circumstance, that's it ends up being what can be looked at as a hate crime. I mean, at least we're talking about it. I think there's another point in Crown Heights that really matters here, is that our neighborhood has been going through a lot of gentrification. A lot more this community has been, up till the last decade, it's been primarily African-American and Hasidic Jews. And now we're getting a huge, huge influx of people that all of us look at as outsiders. Prices are going up, and there is a little, undercurrent that people are not happy. And again, there are white people here. And they're not the targets here. Yeah. It's not once or twice, it's a handful of times. Enough that people are concerned walking on the street, and they're not going after, they're going after the Jews, that there is something to it. I think maybe people are getting their frustration out, but they're clearly getting out of one group.
Yehuda, I appreciate your call, and I guess we're not going to settle that, and people are certainly going to have their perceptions. But if there's, his theory is that the Hasidim in Crown Heights would be seen as easy pickings because they're not known for physically fighting back. And so whether it's motivated as a get-the-Jew hate crime or not, there may still be this pattern. Since you said before that they do often go after older people or people who they think are going to be easy prey, does that ring true to you?
Yes. As I said, I think a couple conditions are necessary. First of all, the other caller who mentioned if they know the person or have seen them around the neighborhood, they're unlikely to do this, which to me is a definition of the social distance is necessary. It has to look like a stranger. The other thing are people carrying packages and looking distracted. And both of these things are independent of race, ethnicity, class. But I think if we had data on this, if someone were collecting and pulling out all these offenses from the big pile of regular old assaults, we might be able to see a pattern. But I think the one pattern that's probably unquestionable is that this is the behavior of young people. And I said to someone the other day, this is ironic that I think a lot of young men are doing this to prove their manhood, and all they're really doing is showing us what children they still are. Because this is the behavior. People can call them monsters and whatever, but an adolescent by nature is someone who their mental capacity to think about the consequences of their behavior, to think about other people and have empathy, develops more slowly than the parts of their brain which are about thrill-seeking, excitement, and peer approval. So you have adolescents walking around who are concentrated on fun and excitement, and they're not thinking about the pain and suffering they can cause.
Let me take one more call. We're just about out of time, but I think Kevin in Manhattan is making an interesting point. Kevin, you're on the air. Hi, real quick.
Hi, thanks, Brian, and your guests. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to make a quick point. I think that the media's characterization of calling it a game contributes to the fact that the kids that are doing this don't really see it as something that's punishable.
Thank you. And where did that title come from, that term that everybody's using regarding this called the knockout game?
I was told by a reporter yesterday who did a search on the Washington Post archives that he found a mention of the knockout game in a Washington Post article in 1895. So I don't know exactly the context and of this behavior. I totally agree with the caller. If it were, if these things were called random attacks or, you know, sudden assaults or something other than the word game, it may be, it may communicate a different message
and be less attractive.
Yes.
Jeffrey Butts, director of the Research and Evaluation Center at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.